Introducing Carvana Value Tracker, where you can track your car's value over time and learn what's driving it. It might make you excited.
Whoa, didn't know my car was valued this high.
It might make you nervous.
Uh-oh, market's flooded. My car's value just dipped 2.3%.
It might make you optimistic.
Our low mileage is paying off. Our value's up.
And it might make you realistic.
Car prices haven't gone up in a couple weeks. Maybe it's time to sell.
But it will definitely make you an expert on your car's value. Carvana Value Tracker. Visit Carvana.com to start tracking your car's value today.
We continue. This is Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. Hour number two of our radio program. Christian Hackenberg is going to stop by coming up 20 minutes from now as we'll discuss Penn State's big game this weekend against Ohio State and another crazy weekend of college football. So Kyler Murray is now activated from the PUP list. That's a 21-day window where they now have to activate him to the roster. And if they don't, then he's going to be out for the season with the Arizona Cardinals. But what I will say with Kyler Murray is before the season, I think everyone believed that he'll probably would not come back until December. You know, probably mid-November, the earliest. Like, he's not going to play in their next game. Is he going to play 2 weeks from now? 3 weeks from now, like, he needs to play from 3 weeks from now, at least be moved on to the active roster. But it seems as if he is inching closer and closer to that return with him coming up the list that he was on and now can start to create that window for him to get back on to a football field. But the thought process of, is he their long-term guy now, I think has become very fascinating because Kyler Murray is a good quarterback. But as we've talked about with Dak, I don't think Kyler Murray is a very good quarterback or a great quarterback. And he has paid this enormous amount of money to be the franchise guy with the Arizona Cardinals. And I don't think he is going to be a franchise quarterback in this league. But we're not that far away from him being a quarterback that was a playoff team, double-digit win games, and then you had the disaster coaching of Cliff Kingsbury, Steve Keim being an overrated general manager, and now you have this new regime that doesn't owe him anything outside of the contract that the organization has already guaranteed him. But what I mean by they don't owe him anything, they didn't draft him. Monty Asenfort wasn't a part of this Cardinals regime when they elected to make Kyler Murray the number one overall pick. Jonathan Gannon was not on this coaching staff. And I don't know what Gannon's going to be as a head coach, but so far to start off his tenure with not a lot of talent, this is a coach that at least has his team in games and they're giving gritty efforts week in and week out and they're still losing. For Cardinals fans, that's like the best thing that could happen because you want to get the best draft pick possible. You also have the Houston Texans draft pick because of the Will Anderson trade where Arizona fell back from 3 and they traded that pick to the Texans and the Texans climbed back up from, what was it, like 11 or 12 or something like that in the draft. So now the Texans are a team that you thought for sure that would be a top 5 pick. The Houston Texans, they've done a nice job this year with their new coach in D'Amico Ryans and also C.J. Stroud by far and away being the best rookie quarterback from what we've seen so far through the first 6 weeks of the season, with Bryce Young having basically nothing in Carolina. And now Anthony Richardson's going to be out for the year with that shoulder surgery that he's getting. So for the Cardinals, I don't think you just move on from Kyler Murray this year just for the sake of moving on. You have to have a quarterback and identify a quarterback that is going to be your franchise quarterback or hopefully be your franchise quarterback for the next 5 to 10 years, you know, bare minimum or anywhere in that range where you feel good about giving that quarterback a second contract where look how quickly this narrative has flipped on Kyler Murray, where a lot of people at the time weren't even on board with giving him that extension. Keim and Kingsbury, they give him that extension and Michael Bidwell did because remember they originally extended Keim and Kingsbury and then a year later, Keim and Kingsbury, out of a job and then you have Kyler Murray, who's still on this team, but tore his ACL at the end of the season, and now we don't know his future. So it's all about where the Cardinals draft pick is going to be. Like, if the Cardinals, and they're going to continue to be bad this year, But if they win another game or two and they're not number one overall, you could forget about Caleb Williams then. And then it becomes how they evaluate with Monty Ossenfort, a Drake May, a Shedeur Sanders, if he forgoes his next season with Colorado, Michael Penix Jr., right now the odds-on favorite to win the Heisman Trophy, and whatever other name that they do gather and they do scout where they go, okay, I don't only just like this guy, I don't only just think this guy could be a good quarterback, but I think this quarterback could be a great quarterback, and I think this quarterback could be an elite quarterback. So that is the big question for the Arizona Cardinals, where they may like Kyler Murray, but it's clear this regime isn't in love with Kyler Murray. And they have their eyes wandering in other directions. And yes, they're in a relationship, but you know that they have one foot in, one foot out the door with Kyler Murray. It just comes down to where they're going to be in the draft. And also, Kyler Murray, when you get back onto the field, how do you play? Because right now, the Cardinals, with not a lot of talent, they've been in games. And getting Kyler Murray back should increase your win total. So when he plays, even if it only increases their win total by a game or two this season, Kyler Murray, in some capacity, is going to be a positive for this football team. And that could disrupt their goal of maybe getting their next franchise quarterback. But we're going to find out, really, what Kyler Murray is made out of, because he's not in an ideal situation in Arizona. He's not in a situation right now where you should expect him to put up big numbers and really ooh and ah and wow people and make people impressed with his play. So if he's able to do that, good on him and good on Kyler Murray. And we also got to remember that Kyler Murray is coming off an ACL injury. And we usually see with quarterbacks coming off an ACL injury, it's not until a full season the next year where they go back to being the player that they were. And what I mean by that is Kyler Murray's back soon. Kyler Murray's going to be playing soon. But there's a difference in Kyler Murray being on the field playing and then Kyler Murray being back. And for Kyler Murray being back, I think a lot of it is upstairs. I think a lot of it is mentally, where you have to overcome thinking about the injury. You have to go through getting hit once again. And a lot of times with an ACL injury, like I look back to when Tom Brady came back from that ACL injury, like he was a good quarterback, no doubt about it. In 2009, after recovering from the 08 ACL injury with Bernard Pollard up against the Kansas City Chiefs, but he didn't get back into Tom Brady form until 2010. And that's coming from, right, the greatest quarterback of all time. It even took him time in adjusting, and it took him time to getting back into the level that we expected Tom Brady to be at. So for Kyler Murray, it's a similar thing. And the unfortunate part for him, and it's because of the way that he played towards the end and the lack of maturity and the lack of conviction that he provided for the franchise with the bad study habits and all that. And you had to give him the extension, but then you put that dumb clause in his contract, and it's like, why would you even give him that extension? Where you're auditioning with a new regime, with a new group, to show that you're worthy of sticking around with this team with a contract that's off a brand new extension too. And it's going to be the two factors of how does Kyler control what he could control? And the other part of it as well is where are the Cardinals picking in the draft? Because if that Texans team, I'm not going to say go on a playoff run, but if that Texans team wins like 7 or 8 games this year, you're probably not picking in the top 10 from that Texans pick. And if Murray comes back and plays well, not even great, not even good, just well, you may be out of the top 5. And if they don't fall in love with a great quarterback in their eyes, then there's no need to take a quarterback. Because organizations that just take a quarterback because they need a quarterback are the ones that get it wrong. You got to go through the extensive scouting process and you got to have no doubts, leave no stone unturned, and walk away saying, wow, we know that this guy is going to be the guy for the franchise. And for the Cardinals, you do have time. Like, the contract is not easy to move off of. And you have a new regime in where you never know how long that regime is going to get a shot. But the Cardinals are taking over and they're building from the bottom up this new regime. And the way I look at the Cardinals, even though I wasn't the biggest fan of Gannon, and he's impressed me so far, and I'm not the, you know, Monty Ossenfurt, I had no feel on him, is that this team, year one is a wash. And so far, they've impressed more than they disappointed, even though the record wouldn't indicate that. But just with the performances, then year two, you got to get better. And then by year three, you got to go into that year thinking, okay, this is a playoff caliber team. And this is a team that should be expected to make the playoffs. Whether Kyler Murray is a part of that or is somewhere else is still yet to be determined. But for Kyler Murray, when you get back and when you finally get activated to play, this is a job audition now. Because yes, you're getting your money. Yes, you have a contract with the Arizona Cardinals where you would not be an unrestricted free agent until 2029, until after that 2028 season. But it doesn't mean that you are definitely going to be the Cardinals guy. Like, there was a time where Jared Goff got an extension with the Rams, or Carson Wentz got an extension with the Philadelphia Eagles. Goff now playing well with the Lions. Carson Wentz is shooting like ducks somewhere, probably in North Dakota or wherever he's living. And he's hunting and posting photos with like dead bears and dead deer and all that, because no one's giving Carson Wentz an opportunity because he's played himself out of the league. So just because you get the extension and the team may think they're giving the extension to their guy doesn't mean you are their guy. And there's no more loyalties in Arizona outside of the contract that they owe him. And who knows how much longer Michael Bidwell is going to be an owner to Kyler Murray. And Monty Ossenfurt, he doesn't need Kyler Murray. Jonathan Gannon doesn't need Kyler Murray. It'd be nice in an ideal world where if those two guys could have Kyler Murray be their guy and Kyler Murray could change and turn around the conversation about him and be the player that he's capable of being. But if they don't see that soon, if they don't see signs of that, and oh yeah, by the way, the draft picks fall, where even if the Cardinals aren't on their own as bad of a team as we may think, or the Texans pick doesn't turn out to be that great, you could use those two picks to trade up in the draft to go get your guy too. That's the other part. When you look at it, and maybe there's a team picking in the top five that says, yeah, we're not in love with the quarterback, or we're not going to take a quarterback. But right now in the sport, everyone's chasing for the services of Caleb Williams. Drake May is also a very hot name right now in NFL circles for future franchise quarterbacks. Now, a lot of these other guys, it is conversation, but I don't know how they're going to be viewed as well. So for Kyler Murray, it's kind of put up or shut up time, and we're going to have to wait and see what he turns out to be in this sample size. And if they have the draft pick at the end of the year and they don't feel like he's their guy, then they're going to draft a quarterback and they'll move on from Kyler Murray. But that conversation is going to be a fascinating one. And for Kyler Murray, control what you can control on a football field. But then also, it depends where your team is picking. Because if they're in range to strike and pull the trigger on a Caleb Williams or a Drake May, they're going to do it, and they're going to reset the organization. They'll get what they can get for Kyler Murray in a draft pick and, you know, in trade, and he will be someone that teams will be interested in. And then you'll find a way to figure out the dead cap, but also you have a rookie contract coming in with the new quarterback, so you could afford for the dead cap not to be in a great spot with the Arizona Cardinals as it pertains to Kyler Murray. All righty, let's take a break here on the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. When we return, one of my favorites will join us to preview the Penn State-Ohio State, the former quarterback of the Penn State Nittany Lions, where when I was back in college, I never thought I'd be saying on a national radio show that Christian Hackenberg was one of my favorites, just being a Temple guy. But I always enjoy our conversations now with Christian Hackenberg, so we'll chat up some college football when the Zach Gelb Show returns after these short messages. All righty, rocking and rolling. It is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. Huge game this weekend in college football between Penn State and Ohio State, too. Top 10 teams inside the Big Ten. And now joining us is the former Penn State quarterback in Christian Hackenberg. Christian, always great to have you on. How you been, my main man?
Yeah, Zach, appreciate you. Appreciate the invite again. And, you know, hanging in there, doing good. Excited about this weekend as well. So
where's the confidence level with this Penn State team? We know they're a good team. Franklin struggled ever since getting to Penn State, defeating those top 10 teams, being 3-15. The confidence level of Christian Hackenberg as Penn State goes to Ohio State this weekend is what?
I feel it's extremely high, and mainly due to the depth in this roster. And it took a little bit of time for Coach Franklin to dig it out from the post-sanction era where we had the limitations and stuff like that. But, when you look at it on paper, I don't think Ohio State really has the advantage that they've had in the past. And that's a great thing because ultimately, you know, these games come down to the Jimmys and Joes. So for him, I think he has a lot less to focus on outside of just coaching the game. So I'm really excited to see his approach and the offensive staff's approach in particular. I think the defense knows who they are and what they want to be, but going to be really excited to see what tricks they are going to pull out of that bag there.
You know, it's fascinating to me because I do believe that a lot more people will say the pressure's on Penn State because they're trying to show that they're a national championship contending team. But you look at Ohio State, you know, there's vulnerabilities with this team, and their best win of the season was Notre Dame. And quite frankly, I thought Notre Dame was the better team. They just couldn't catch an interception at the end and get 11 guys on the field.
Yeah, no, I see that point. And for me, though, just being a Penn State homer and for the aforementioned record against, you know, top 10 opponents for Coach Franklin, I would argue that outside of just Penn State, I think for Coach Franklin, this is arguably the biggest game of his career. I know he's won a Big Ten championship. I know he's got over the hump. But just in terms of his plan and developing the roster, developing the depth and creating an identity, he's there now. So for him, he's got to show that he can go out there and wrestle with the big dogs on a consistent basis. So, I do see Ohio State's side of it. But realistically speaking, I think for Penn State, it's about getting over that hump and not only doing it once or twice or by a luck of a block field goal or something like that, or not luck, but by fortune of a block field goal. But because you go out there and you outplay him.
Is the Penn State fan confident with Franklin?
I would say so. And like I said, I just think people undervalue how difficult it was to dig out of those sanctions that were levied on the program just from a roster development standpoint. I obviously had to deal with that as a player when I was up there and the rest of the guys on the team. And it takes time. And especially now in today's world with the transfer portal and stuff like that, you can make those things happen faster, but you know, Coach Franklin really had to do it prior to that. And now, you know, you're seeing it come to fruition. So ultimately I think the Penn State fans are confident because he's been able to do that and he's gotten over the humps. But now I think less about the fan base and more about the administration, Pat Kraft coming in there and stuff like that. That's who he's really got to continue to impress. And, again, like I said, the sanctions are 10 years and he's there. So it's showtime for him. And I'm excited. I think he's mentally ready. I think he's grown a lot as a coach and as an orchestrator of the program and an overseer of the program. But, I think that's really what he needs to continue to work towards is showing for the administration.
Talking to Christian Hackenberg right now, there was a lot of hype with Drew Aller at times last year. A lot of Penn State fans wanted to see him over Sean Clifford, and Sean did a good job last year, and that team did win the Rose Bowl. But now with what you've seen so far out of Drew being the guy, being the starting quarterback, kind of give me your view on the new Penn State quarterback.
Yeah, I think they've done a really good job with him. And I've talked about this. You know, everyone wants to see the flair and the big shots and all the talent that he has, but there is a mastery in his ability to facilitate in that 25 to like low short yardage completion place. He's very, very efficient. And then just from a decision-making standpoint, you don't see him really holding onto the ball too long. A guy who hasn't played much ball and is relatively young from an age standpoint, that's something that pro guys struggle with. And he's done it really well. And I think it's a lot easier to teach someone how to start seeing the opportunities and the shots down the field and stuff like that, as opposed to trying to pull back the reins and say, hey man, like start thinking about being efficient, take the check downs. So really he's starting from a good spot there. And you know, I've just been super impressed with that. And I think the other stuff will come. And I think he's done a good job. Sean's a hard guy to follow up. He's been up there for, you know, 7 years or whatever the heck it was, a lot of consistency. And I think for him, you know, got a great running game. He doesn't have to go out there and win it himself until this weekend. I really do think it's going to come down to two or three plays by either him or McCord is who's going to decide this game. So I'm excited for him for that opportunity, but really impressed with his development and how he's continued to just grow and learn and, you know, low key, how he talks to the media, just the whole package.
The ceiling for Kyle McCord, the Ohio State quarterback, as we're talking to Christian Hackenberg right now, is what?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think he's a really, really good player. I mean, from a fundamental standpoint, a technique standpoint, I really like some things that he does. And I think for Ohio State, it's strange when you don't have the overall explosiveness that they're so used to. And I think it's very easy to point the finger at the quarterback. But I think there's a lot of things that factor into that. You know, they've been banged up. The running game's not as strong. The offensive line's, I don't think, as strong as it used to be, as it traditionally has been. So, he's stepping into a different situation than his predecessors, but I do really like the kid's game. Ceiling wise, you know, I don't know. It's the position is so dependent. I've said this to you before, and I think a lot of other folks, it's so dependent on what's around you. Yeah. But he does have a good base, and I think Ryan Day is doing a good job of figuring out what he does well, and that takes time as well. So,
Christian Hackenberg here with us. So we've seen Michigan own Ohio State the last 2 years, and the way they did that was kind of bully ball, beat the snot out of you inside the trenches, hit on those big plays. We know how good Penn State's offensive line can be. We know that Penn State has explosive big play ability, but they got to be more consistent with it. Going into this game, do you kind of feel as if Penn State and Michigan in terms of style are similar, and that gives an advantage to Penn State going up against Ohio State?
Yeah, I mean, I've said that in the past. I think this Penn State team mirrors a lot more of that like old school physical football, not just Michigan, but I mean, they possess the football. They don't turn it over and they run the ball at an efficient clip. Now the explosive and all that stuff, like I said, I think that stuff can come and they have the roster and the athletes to be able to get those and it'll start happening. But yeah, I think defensively they built their defensive roster and personnel to be able to run sideline to sideline with those other teams that are getting athletes. And I think that they've shored up some things on the inside. So overall matchup wise, like, yes, I think Penn State has done a great job of grasping that old school mentality of we're going to impose our will. And then we're also going to augment that with athletes that when you get them the ball in space can make stuff happen. So, you know, I'm really curious to see how it shakes out against a top 10 opponent, top five opponent. Cause we haven't seen that yet, but, at least this year. So it is intriguing and it is kind of funny to study on how those three programs in particular have developed over really the last 4 or 5 years.
Wrapping up with Christian Hackenberg. So Michigan in the news today, we know before the season, there was the recruiting problems with Jim Harbaugh. Yeah, self-imposed 3-game suspension. I thought going into this season, this would be his final year at Michigan. He'd just say, bleep all this nonsense. I'm going back to the NFL. Now there's sign-stealing allegations, and they're sending people to go scout other opponents. Like, I kind of roll my eyes at a lot of this stuff, but the rules are what the rules are. Do you feel as if this will be it for Harbaugh at Michigan? He'll just say, I'm not dealing with the NCAA and go back to the pros.
It'll be really interesting. You know, I also think Jim's had so much success, and it's one of those things where if I was in his shoes at my alma mater, you know, see, especially with the team they have this year, like see how it plays out. If you do what you need to do and you get over the hump, no better way to say sayonara, just ride off in the sunset than at your home place. But if he's still got the fire, which I would assume he probably still does, and depending on how it all shakes out, I don't see that being something that I would not expect if the right opportunity presented itself. But I don't think he's just going to jump ship haphazardly because of this. I think he can continue to deal with it. And I think he really wants to, if he does make that move, be a competitor and at least an immediate competitor for championship Super Bowl type of teams and organizations. So I know that's tough to find, but you know, they do arise. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, I'm not sold that it's Michigan. I don't think he's going to be the guy at Michigan for in 5 years. I'll put it at that. Like, I think that the sun is setting on that chapter.
So we've talked about Dabo Swinney before via text message, and I voiced my frustration with Dabo Swinney to you about 2-3 weeks ago with the arrogance and the name, image, and likeness comments and not embracing the transfer portal. The other day, and I'm sure you've seen the comments, he's like going after the fans where everyone was on the bandwagon a few years ago, and now maybe we should lose more games and people would jump off the bandwagon. Just what an arrogant SOB this guy is. It's like you love when people are praising you when you're winning, but because you built a great standard and people are finally starting to hold you accountable to that standard, now you're just whining and just being absolutely ridiculous for Dabo Swinney.
It's strange, and I did see your rant on that as well. So you put two Hall of Fame caliber rants together on Dabo. But it is just strange to me that that's the approach that he would take. It's just his background. He, you know, Saban coaching tree. Like, I think it should just be the standard. And, you know, it's a fall of a dynasty down there, in my opinion. It was yeah. Funny. I was telling my little brother, he's like, we were so used to just leave. He played baseball down there. He's like, we would leave at halftime. And now it's like, they're in dogfights, but they still have the same type of talent, same type of recruiting classes. So I just think, there's some deep soul searching that goes on, but I really do think that ship has also passed down there in Clemson.
So everyone talks so positively about Caleb Williams, and deservedly so, with what he does on a football field. A lot of people know how good Drake May is, but do you think there's a chance that maybe Drake May usurps Caleb Williams and we actually see Drake May be the number one overall pick?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's going to be really tough just because of the media pressure. I think you saw a little bit of that even this past year with CJ and Bryce Young. You know, I said it before. I think when you're talking about those types of players, it's 1A, 1B, 1C. And really what it comes down to is fit culturally in the locker room, in the city. Like when you draft someone there, that person is supposed to be the face of that program for the next 10 to 15 years or organization for the next 10 to 15 years. So with those two players in particular, I think slightly different body types, things of that nature, but games are pretty similar when it comes to throwing the football. They're both facilitators. They both push it down the field. They both create with their legs. And I think ultimately it's going to come down to fit, but Caleb just has so much juice behind him. And honestly, you know, I from a Heisman standpoint, like best player on the team, MVP, like I think the Notre Dame game, the loss, is actually a more glaring point as to why and how valuable Caleb Williams is to USC. If he does not play well, that is a subpar football team. When he's playing well, they can go out and compete with anybody. So I think that's really intriguing. And I think a testament to his talents, but, you know, I think the better situation would be Drake just playing that second fiddle, seeing what happens, read and react. He might land in a better situation for it.
So Alabama, Tennessee this weekend, Alabama already has one loss. I think a second loss will eventually come at some point this year and they won't be in the college football playoff, but they only have one loss right now. They're starting to get some more wins. People are like, it is Alabama. Are you buying back in on the Crimson Tide, or did they show their true colors earlier this season?
No, I think that they're at a loss just due to the fact that their identity for the past 5 years has been kind of stripped from them. I think Milroe presents some issues from a defensive standpoint, but I don't think it's what everyone's used to. And they are also very correctable. He turns it over, he makes some mistakes. So, I just think that they're so heavily dependent on defense and kind of controlling the clock and running the football. And I don't think their offensive line is as dominant as it has been as well. So I do think Alabama is very vulnerable, and the whole SEC is kind of just a wild west. Even Georgia, I think Georgia's,
especially with the Brock Bowers injury now too.
Yeah. It's just the SEC is going to be extremely, extremely cutthroat. And I don't think the days of the reigns of Alabama and someone just upsetting them and then no one's worried about it, or Georgia the same way, one loss and they go into the SEC championship game and go to the college football playoffs and roll again. I think those days are over, especially in that conference. But I do think Alabama is extremely vulnerable.
Last thing I'll ask you, need an official prediction. Christian Hackenberg, the former Penn State quarterback, Penn State, Ohio State this weekend. What's the score going to be?
Ooh, I do think it's going to be a tight one. I do think the defenses are going to come up. I got the Nittany Lions winning somewhere in the range of like 28, 24, 27 to 31, something like that. It's going to be, it's going to be, I think it's going to be a dogfight. It's going to come down to three or four plays by the guy pulling the trigger on either side, who can make them and who can't.
What was the toughest environment you've ever had to play in, by the way? Because you know that crowd, and the Penn State fan always travels, but that's going to be a crazy Ohio State crowd this weekend.
No, it's crazy. And it's funny. I was talking to Joshua Perry earlier this week about it, and the shoe at noon is way different than the shoe at night. The shoe at night is extremely tough. I did that twice. It's nuts. But he said, you know, the noon games in Columbus are always tough for the fans to get up for. So hopefully that plays in the
spoiled
in the guys
fan base. What a bunch of losers. You can't get up for a noon game. Come on.
Unbelievable. But yeah, the shoe's tough. Wisconsin's unbelievable too. If you're up, that's a great environment. But yeah, the shoe is definitely tough. Those guys, they do like to get after the boys in blue and white too. So that's always fun. The banter back and forth with the fans.
Christian Hackenberg, always appreciate the time. Thanks so much for doing this.
Zach, appreciate you, brother.
There you go. He's Christian Hackenberg joining us for a few minutes of the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Let's get the latest CBS Sports Radio update in with the Ackman, Rich Ackerman. And this portion of the show is brought to you by Wesley Financial. Stuck in a timeshare and want out? Contact Wesley Financial Group now and get a free timeshare exit information kit at wesleyfinancialgroup.com. Time to get to Take 5.
As the dust settles from last week's games, it's time to look at which teams are rising.
Touchdown!
And which are falling.
And there's an interception.
Zach ranks his top five NFL and college football teams on this week's edition of Take 5, only on the Zach Gelb Show.
So, Take 5 Wednesday on a Thursday, because I was out yesterday on a Wednesday. But we always got to give you our power rankings each and every week in college football and the NFL. Let me go college football first. In at number five, Florida State. I do think Florida State, and I picked them to win the ACC before the season started, is on upset watch this week. I like Mike Elko a lot. I think he's a really phenomenal coach and an underrated coach. And I actually wanted him at one point to be the head coach of my Temple Owls, who are just a miserable football program right now. But Mike Elko's done a good job early on in his first 2 years at Duke. And Florida State, sure, they have two really good wins to their resume. I know LSU has not aged well, but at the time, LSU was thought to be a national championship contender. I didn't think they would have two losses this young into the season. But back in week one, Florida State destroyed LSU in the second half. And then good football teams find a way to win when they don't play their best brand of football. And that's what Clemson did. That's what Florida State did up against Clemson. So I put Florida State in at five. Love their quarterback in Jordan Travis. But this week, it would not surprise me if this time next week we are talking about Florida State out of our top five here, because Duke is very much so alive this week. Alrighty, in at number four, Oklahoma. I would say that's the second best football game that I've saw this season in college football. Number one was Washington and Oregon, but 2 weeks ago, Red River definitely did live up to the hype with Oklahoma and Texas. And what a fun football game that was between those two teams and what did transpire on the football field. And Oklahoma now has a path where they should be going to the Big 12 championship game. And we'll see if they could go get another victory in that Big 12 championship game, especially if they're going up against Texas once again. But that could be an enormous task to go beat Texas twice if Texas is in the Big 12 championship game. But Oklahoma, if they go down any other time in this regular season, it would be a disappointment. I love what Brent Venables has done. Dylan Gabriel has done a very nice job here in year number two at Oklahoma. And that defense is starting to come alive where it was god-awful a year ago. So Oklahoma is in at number four. In at number three, this is a team that before the year, just like Florida State, I identified as the best team in their conference. I love Kalen DeBoer. He only has two losses in his first 2 years at Washington, and both of those losses were by 8 points or fewer. And this win that he just had up against Oregon, which was such a joy and a fun game to watch, with it being back and forth, both coaches being super duper aggressive, and Michael Penix just being hurt and playing through that pain and stepping up and delivering. It was unfortunate that the game ended. I know if you're a fan of the Huskies, you're not like bitching and complaining, but it was unfortunate that you had in such a great game, it come down to a kicker just not being able to make a kick. Because as a college football fan, where, yeah, you know, I could like Washington slightly over Oregon, and just because I picked Washington heading into the season, but I have no disdain for either football team. And as a college football fan, I felt as if we were robbed seeing overtime, because the kicker for Oregon just has to simply make that chip shot and get that game into overtime. But Washington is a force. Washington has right now the Heisman Trophy favorite and the odds-on favorite to win the Heisman Trophy. And you have a unbelievable receiver as well, Romo Odunze. And this is a Washington team that it's not a matter of if I think, right, they could get to a Pac-12 championship game and win the Pac-12, because they have the talent to do so. You just look around at the Pac-12. They are loaded with talent. They are loaded with teams. And it's a shame that the Pac-12 is in its final season, because the Pac-12 is eventually going to beat up on one another, and the strong teams are going to go down, and you're going to have surprises and upsets and all this stuff just because of how well-rounded and well-loaded this conference is. But I put Washington in at three. Number two, I said I would not move this team out of the number one spot until they did go down. And Georgia, we all know what has been built there by Kirby Smart and what they have done the last 2 years. And it's one thing to say, oh, Georgia is not as good as they've been in years past. And there's merit to that this year, and they could still win the national championship game. But I do believe the Brock Bowers injury does change things. Where Brock Bowers could come on back, and it's 4 to 6 weeks. We'll see if there's any hiccups and any roadblocks from him returning around Thanksgiving or for the SEC title game, or if there's a want to by Brock Bowers to come back, who's already asserted himself as the preeminent tight end in the country, has already asserted himself as he'll be the first tight end off the draft board come April. And he's a force. He should be a top 10 pick, top 15 pick. And he's already won not one, but two national championship games. So maybe Brock Bowers makes a business decision and say, coming off this surgery, I'm not going to return for Georgia. I don't know what Brock Bowers is going to do. But until Brock Bowers comes back, even though Georgia is still really damn good, and to be the champ, you got to beat the champ, that vulnerability and that feeling that Georgia could be got now just gets intensified, because we don't know when their best player is definitely going to be coming back. So I have dropped Georgia, who's been the one spot all throughout the year, down to number two. And in at number one, I know you could sit there and tell me Michigan hasn't played anybody. And Michigan coming up in a few weeks, they do have that game up against Penn State on November 11th. And then the final game of the season, Thanksgiving weekend, they do have the Ohio State Buckeyes. But J.J. McCarthy had a ridiculous throw. I know it's all beat up against Indiana, but it was a Mahomes-like throw with the underhand. And McCarthy's playing some really good football. You got the 1-2 punch of Blake Corum and Donovan Edwards. It seems, you know, Roman Wilson gets a touchdown every week, but they're loaded with wide receivers. They're well-built in the trenches on the offensive side and the defensive side of the ball. They may be looking at some other team signs, which could always help, and I say that in jest. But I do think right now, with the Bowers injury to Georgia, Michigan's the most well-rounded team in the country. Now, you could tell me they haven't played anybody, but they'll get the benefit of the doubt with what they've done the last two seasons. So there's my five in college football. I go Florida State 5, Oklahoma 4, Washington, welcome back to the top five after last weekend at number 3, Georgia 2, and Michigan 1. Samter, speak now, forever hold your peace. Give me some teams that you think could maybe have a case to be made to be inside my top five.
We just had Christian Hackenberg on Ohio State, Penn State this weekend. You have neither of those teams in your top five. What's going on?
So it's the record for James Franklin up against top 10 teams, where I give Michigan the benefit of the doubt, even though they haven't played anybody. Whenever James Franklin plays somebody, he's 3-15 in his career up against teams in the top 10 at Penn State. So that's why I don't have Penn State in there. And for Ohio State, their best win of the season was Notre Dame. It's a wonderful win, but I wasn't impressed with Ohio State. I was more, what the heck did Notre Dame, had they lose that game with the dropped interception and only having 10 guys on the field? So no Ohio State, no Penn State. But if one of those teams, you know, whoever wins this weekend, not if, when one of those teams win this weekend, it could be a different conversation next week. Last team?
How about Drake May and UNC, those Tar Heels?
Yeah, they're making a run. And everyone's not talking about them in the ACC because of what Florida State has done. Let's see where they're at in a few weeks. But there's a case being made for Drake May. You also get back Tez Walker. All righty. Let's go to the NFL. Dolphins in at number five. I think the Dolphins could eventually be at the number one spot, but they did lose to Buffalo. Enormous test this week with the Philadelphia Eagles in a tough environment. They're just a loaded team, and they're going to eventually get healthier with Achan coming back, Jalen Ramsey coming back, Jalen Phillips as well, and Xavier Howard. So they're getting only healthier, and Tua Tagovailoa has done a phenomenal job this season, and Mike McDaniel's turning in to be a really special coach. But Dolphins in at number five because of the Buffalo loss. Four. It's the San Francisco 49ers. They've dropped a few spots because of losing to the Cleveland Browns last week. I know that they had McCaffrey get hurt and Debo get hurt and Trent Williams get hurt in the game, and they could have had the Jake Moody kick go in, and they probably don't fall, but I have to drop the 49ers down to four after the loss. Eagles lose as well. I think the Eagles are slightly better than the 49ers. They lose to the Jets, so that's why I dropped the 49ers. I have to drop the Eagles as well. And then Kansas City, with all their flaws, they only have one loss on the season. And they lost to the team that's in at the number one spot, and that is the Detroit Lions, who continue to hum and continue to bite off some kneecaps. The Lions are my number one spot. So Dolphins 5, 49ers 4, Eagles 3, Chiefs 2, Lions 1. Samter, speak now, forever hold your peace.
There's not a lot of other teams that I can think of, but how about the Baltimore Ravens, Lamar Jackson, 4-2?
Yeah, the injuries are a concern there, and I still go back to 2 weeks ago where they lost to the Steelers, a game they should have won. Did not like the way the receivers dropped so many footballs, and Lamar Jackson made that mistake at the end with the interception.
And then last one, Josh Allen, the Bills. They're up and down, but at times they look great.
They do, and it's a lack of consistency. That's the problem for me. Like, when you go up against the Giants, and the Giants don't have Daniel Jones, and the Giants don't have a great team to begin with, you can't almost lose that game. And if the officials throw another flag, they may have lost that game. If Tyrod Taylor doesn't run the ball at the end of the first half, they probably lose that game as well. For Buffalo, they have the ceiling to be the best team in the league, but it's too much up and down with the Buffalo Bills. So for the NFL, one more time, Dolphins 5, 49ers 4, Eagles 3, Chiefs 2, Lions 1 after week 6. And for college football, Florida State, Oklahoma, Washington, Georgia, Michigan, 5-1 being that order. Coming on back, Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio.